Oh, hey, how are you?
Great to hear. Yeah, come in. Make yourself comfortable.
Like a drink?
Sure. There you go. Welcome to the Tech Lounge. Shall we begin?
Welcome to the Tech Lounge with me, Christian Scheller. As always, this episode, I am speaking with Ed from Cribble. Cool name, cute name, but a serious product. They handle telemetry data, logs, metrics, traces, all the observability tools we are coming to expect in this cloud-native world. Another option in that growing landscape. So I speak to Ed about what they offer over all of their competition. I hope you enjoy the interview. Before we begin, first a word from some sponsors, and I have a new one to tell you about. If you are looking for a simple option to replace the internal screenshot tool in macOS, then look no further than Simple Screenshot. It features numerous customization tools for screenshots, easy access to those customizations and screenshot types, as well as output, format, location for the screenshots, and many other features besides. If you are interested in getting a copy for a reduced rate and throwing the show a few cents, then head on over to go.christianscheller.com/simple-screenshot. I see you're using Crisp, though, the AI. I didn't know they were still going. It's the AI noise reduction one, yeah?
Oh, yeah. I love that stuff.
I didn't know they were still going. That's actually kind of cool. I assumed that they'd just sort of been superseded by everybody else, but
yeah, I work in my office is in my basement, and so my AC and heater and everything are 15 feet away. So
I just post-process everything, because the problem with a lot of places in Berlin is they have very high ceilings, which makes them very echoey.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
And there's only so much I could do. Anyway, let's jump into Cribble. I do love the name. It makes me think of isn't there like a creature in Star Trek?
So do you know the origin?
No, go for it.
Oh, so Cribble is a derivation of crible, which is French for screen.
Okay.
And so this is something the gold miners in California in the 1800s used a gold screen, and apparently they weren't very good with French, and so they dropped the E and just called it Cribble. So the idea, the metaphor is the idea is to have a screen for your data.
Okay. Well, I think you've given me a very good segue where we should actually kind of dig into that. So, yeah, what is Cribble? Not the original meaning, but what is your Cribble?
Cribble is a data company that focuses on IT observability and security data. This is a very specialized set of data, but it's also a very large data set in the enterprise. I'd estimate easily 30-35% of all the data in the enterprises would fall under this subset. But what's interesting about it is that you have this enormous business focus on what's called business intelligence data, data that drives the business. But then you also have this huge data set that's not treated as business data, yet it's still critical. I would argue that it's just as critical. Mm. You're running your security, your IT functions, your observability functions from it.
Yeah.
But the data is all over the place. It is nothing like the discipline and order on the BI side. And so what Cribble has done so well is that we give teams the ability to bring data skills into a place where the data skills just haven't been before. The data tools that are by default set up for ugly data. So how can we turn ugly data into usable data? So now we can get more benefit, more features, more value from our data tools.
Let's unpack this a little bit, because I've had a few observability companies on the show, but generally you're right. It's usually kind of like running data. It's some, you know, uptimes, latency times, network times, metrics you create, that kind of thing. But yours is specifically around security.
No. Observability. So the vast majority of the data, we do work with a lot of security teams, but enormous subsets of every data would fall under observability and IT data.
Right. Okay.
So to give you an idea, application logs. So just go back a little bit, even a little bit further. So I was one of Cribble's first customers. I was a second customer. I own all the observability, all the security, all the IT data, retention, GDPR compliance at a global company. And had enormous issues with controlling, onboarding, managing the data. And so, and in my biggest data set was application logs.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And then closely followed by cloud logs, DNS logs, things like that.
And so I think one of the things we have to ask in this space, because it's quite a busy space.
Yes.
What is Cribble doing differently from many of the other telemetry, observability data companies? Yeah.
The fundamental thing that made Cribble different for me, so this was 2018 when I first purchased Cribble, and the same now. Cribble had helped me get my data from anywhere to anywhere. Okay. Every other vendor in the space that says, give me your data, I'll solve all your problems.
Okay. And
that's the fundamental difference. So you look at every other vendor, give me this data, this data sets, I'm going to give you all the value. Where in the modern enterprise, it's rare that it's just one tool.
Yeah.
And it's just, so just give you an idea that, so it, like in where I most commonly see is they're going to have, say, Splunk Enterprise Security on this for the SIEM side. They're going to be using Datadog on the observability side. They're going to be using Elastic on the log management side. And typically it's the same data sets that are in every place. And there's enormous amount of overlap. And so what you have to do is, in order to supply your different tools with the same data, typically you're installing multiple agents, you're having enormous workarounds, you're having just very complicated one-off systems that are very tough to maintain. So now you're having trouble controlling the amount of data, the quality of the data.
Yeah.
And then also you're spending a lot of engineering time just keeping it working.
Yeah. So you're not looking to replace any of these common competitors, but actually connect them together.
Yeah, and this is one of the things I'd say is, like, in the modern IT space, integrations are the hardest thing. And it's part of the market. Every vendor wants to talk differently. They want different formats, different protocols, different ways of using. This is where the agent is. The agent is a mechanism of lock-in.
And I just wonder, sort of, like, you mentioned that you were Cribble's second customer, or you were a customer.
Yes, I was right. Exactly.
Yeah. So when did it begin? What was the origin story of the company? That sounds like it might be, quote unquote, older in the observability space, whatever that may mean.
Well, this is what was so funny about it, was that I was a very large Splunk customer at that time. And we were having a lot of struggle because we were having to build all these integration tools. And I happened to see a Facebook ad. And so I had no idea what Cribble was, but I did know the name of the CEO, so Clint Sharp, because he had helped me with things when he was at Splunk. And so I took the meeting, and I was immediately struck by that's what they addressed, was how to get data from anywhere to anywhere with as little effort as humanly possible. Mm. The user interface is what impressed me the most. And this is what was funny, was the CEO was my salesperson, which I still find funny. I'll never forget working with my procurement person, and she said, okay, here's all these contracts, NDAs that have to get signed. And so I sent them to Clint, and they came 30 seconds later, they all come back signed. And she was like, just like, how did that happen? You know, how do you get, you know, all the legal sign off? Well, the salesperson is also the CEO. That made it a lot easier.
And when did the company begin then?
2018.
Oh, so relatively recent.
Yeah.
That's kind of, I think, that sort of era is when a lot of the new wave observability companies formed, I think, kind of 2018, 2019-ish.
Well, very, very much so. Yeah. And this is why it was just so different, because we were just struggling. I had 5 people to manage a global implementation, about 40 terabytes a day. And we had 3,500 active users. And so I was looking for everything I could do in order to minimize how much time I was spending, because we were spending all of our time getting data to our tools. We weren't spending nearly enough time getting value from our tools. Mm. And that was ultimately the big business driver, that once I had Cribble in place, I was able to stop my data growth. By the way, my data growth was 26-28% year over year. So 7-figure growth year over year. And that, because I just simply could control it. Once I had Cribble in place, we were able to get that data growth down to 5-8%. And I was able to shift 50% of my engineering time over to getting value from my tools. And ultimately, at the end of the day, that's the value, is the analytics from your tools.
So I wouldn't mind actually stepping through some of the feature areas to understand the product a bit more. I think actually the one that is possibly supposed to be the easiest to understand, but the one I'm not 100% sure if I understand the most is onboarding. So you've got these kind of tabs here. I'm going to step through a little bit. Onboarding, is this onboarding the different services that you might want to connect, or onboarding to Cribble itself? I'd like to understand what the onboarding experience might be. I have various sources of data. I have different ways I want to visualize that data, and I want to use Cribble to connect all of those. So how do I begin with that process?
Sure. And that was one of the best things about it, is having an easy user experience. Mm. Enterprise software is notoriously user unfriendly. Mm. And so that was one of the things I loved about Cribble, was you had a very, four clicks and you're done mm-hmm. type of interface, where I can go in my interface. And this is what was a big deal for me, is like in every team, there's the regex guy, the syslog guy, the person who really knows how to unroll JSON,
yep.
who knows how to code. I was able to take all these steps and hand it off to junior people. Like I've always been the old guy, the person who understands syslog. So I was able to offload these tasks to 22-year-olds who were fresh out of college in order, so now that they could have a repeatable experience and get the same thing done, but with not having to involve my most experienced people. And so from an onboarding experience, where it matters is at the end result, you're getting something very similar, but you're able to get it done dramatically faster. So like for my team's experience, we are able to reduce our onboarding time from about 4 to 6 weeks to less than a day. And so that was through automation, that was through the enhanced user experience, that was through the ability to create workflows. And now I'm able to shift all my time and all my experience over to getting more value from the data. The thing to think about it is collecting data and storing data is a cost. Mm. There's almost no value there. The value is once you get your data to your tools, now it's in the right format. It's enriched. It's in a shape that I can use it in. Now that's where I get my value from. And that's where that idea of Cribble helps lift the value of my entire tool set.
I still like to try and understand how this may look to someone a little bit though. So say I could see a graphic here on the webpage. Say I have a dog and Splunk, and I want to get both of those into one Grafana output.
Okay, sure.
Yeah.
All right. So let's go through that. So the idea is, at first you set up your sources.
Okay.
Like the way we would always do it is we would also, so the data coming in from a fresh source would go into what's called a null queue or a dead letter queue. So that way the data doesn't go upstream to my tools. And so data is coming in. And so let's say syslog and Datadog. Mm-hmm. So we're able to open up those channels. We can see data coming in. Cribble has this Cribble and its Cribble stream has this nice thing called live capture, mm-hmm. where I can open up these channels. I can do a live capture. I can see the data as it's coming in over the wire so that I know that it works. And then I'm able to have what's called add it to a route.
Yeah.
So source comes into the route, and then I'm able to the data then flows down the route, and then I can manage it. So like what you mentioned, that I want to take two sources. I want to put it through a single pipeline. Mm-hmm. I want to normalize the data. So let's say I want to turn everything into JSON. I can then normalize my timestamps. I can add an enrichment feature that says I'm going to turn every IP into a fully qualified domain name. I'm going to add GeoIP. Mm-hmm. And then I'm going to output that, say, to Elastic.
Okay.
And that's something that you can do in a couple hours.
Yeah. And in your kind of on the webpage here, this is the transform and a little bit of the reduce, I guess. Reduce in kind of the map reduce pattern.
Right. And this is where you have choices.
Yeah.
Like the best way I was led is it gave me full choice and control over my data. So for example, say that I have data coming in from Datadog, that's Datadog's internal agent logs. Mm-hmm. So in my pipeline, I can say, if it's this kind of data, I want to drop it.
Yeah.
If I have JSON, I am going to unroll the JSON. So essentially deserialize it. I'm now going to say if it's a null, if there's a null or if there is a repeating feature, then I'm going to drop that field. And so now I can make the data smaller. I can make the data more compact, and then I can put it back into JSON. So that way you're, from a formatting standpoint, you're not interrupting anything. You're not breaking anything with your data tools, but you are making everything materially smaller. And one thing I wanted to mention is our most common pattern is that you're going to have a highly optimized copy going into your data tool, say Elastic. Mm. But I'm going to also, I'm going to clone my raw data to object storage. So now my raw data goes to object storage. So I can maintain my retention in object storage, which is going to be the cheapest place. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to put my retention in my data tool, which is going to be my most expensive place. And so now that's one more way that I'm giving myself more flexibility and I'm reducing my cost. Mm-hmm. So far, does that make sense?
Yeah. I can see in some later stages of the tool, which we'll come to in a minute, but this sort of routing, reducing, transforming, collecting into other places, how would these compare to something open source like FluentBit?
And so this is something, so FluentBit is a great tool. Yeah. It has a lot of power. But it also requires some knowledge to know how to get it to work.
I've spent many times grappling with its rules. Yes,
right, and that's always there's a trade-off everywhere.
Yeah,
and so for example, my team, we used a combination of FluentBit, Kafka, and NiFi, mm-hmm. and it wasn't that we couldn't make these tools. With enough engineering time, I can do anything. Mm-hmm. But this is something that as a leader, I had to be very careful about was. Where do I put my engineering time? I would argue in today's enterprise, your engineering time is your most finite resource. And so the idea is I have to shift my time to value. Getting data through free tools that's eating up my engineering time, where I can't get value from my data tools. To me, that's you're not putting your emphasis on business value.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so this was a big change was. If I can manage my data, less data, better data, then also focus my engineering time where it really matters, then that was the ROI.
Yeah. I mean, I kind of knew the answer to that question. It's the classic answer to the question of why use a SaaS product instead of an open source product, of course. I just wanted to...
Open source is great. I think it really has a lot of value. But it's so much of it is the conundrum of this. Do you have enough time to do it? And that was a huge... my team fought with this for almost 2 years. And we argued incessantly internally about what are we going to do? Mm-hmm. Like, because I had a couple of guys working from who were so smart. And they're like, I can build this. And I was like, there's no question that you can build this, but can we afford to maintain it?
Yeah. 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 And this is always the problem with custom tooling, isn't it? There is a cost to open source. As much as I'm an open source fan, there is a cost to it. But just out of pure interest, though, I'm assuming that if I wanted to adopt a similar approach with Cribble, like I want to have a bunch of config files that can be version controlled and things like that, is that an option or is it all through a GUI?
Well, so we have GitOps features. Okay. And so the underlying code is all config files.
Okay.
And so that, and I do have customers that manage it at that level. The concern we have is it's very difficult to have complex transformations to understand what's happening with the code, what's happening with your data if you're just looking at it as code.
Yeah.
And so what essentially we recommend is building essentially an SDLC and treat the Cribble UI as your developer interface, where now I'm building code, I'm understanding it. Think of it like VS Code, where the data is coming through, I understand it. Now I package it up into what we call a pack. Mm-hmm. And then you promote your pack to production, and that becomes your code transport. We're getting ready to introduce something called composable management, which is the idea is to try to give the middle ground between pure GitOps, but also something that's ClickOps. So we're trying to have that middle ground to make it more composable, to make it easier to manage, to give the best of both worlds. Mm. I think the thing that gets lost a lot is the average ordinary IT shop is going to be three guys in the Midwest or three guys who are working somewhere trying to do their best. They're overwhelmed. They got too many things going on and they need something that's easier to use. And so how do we provide tools that the most advanced engineers are going to want, but also the ordinary great middle as well?
Yeah. So just to jump to the other end, because this is where I think things are more interesting, but also maybe more overlapping with some of the integrations as a kind of a competitor, the collect, search, store, visualize. So you start at the far end. So visualize, is this, you have your own visualization as well in addition to?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah.
So we've been talking about Cribble Stream. We also have our own agent called Cribble Edge.
Okay.
One thing I want to emphasize about Edge is it takes a similar approach to the user experience, but it's not required at all. It's very much choose your agent.
Yep.
And so you choose your data source, choose your agent. We don't have a play there. Now, we do also have data tools. Mm-hmm. So we've slowly started building up a portfolio. The idea is that we want to be able to augment and fill in the gaps for what companies are doing with their data now.
Okay.
And so this is where Cribble Search comes in. Cribble Search, what makes Cribble Search interesting is that the idea is it has this concept of search in place. Mm-hmm. Think about all the data that's produced and all the cost of centralizing all your data. For years and years, we've always been told, okay, we got to take all the data from all of our cloud providers, all of our apps, bring it in one place to make it useful. That act is very costly. And so the idea with Cribble Search is I can leave my audit logs, my flow logs in my cloud provider of choice. Yeah. And from Cribble Search, I can then reach out to the object storage. I can search the data where it is and only bring back the results. So that way I can then match value and cost. A lot of these data sets are not very valuable day to day, but when they are valuable, they're the most valuable thing you have. And so by searching in place, I can have the ability to get to my data without having to pay the cost to bring it all together.
Yeah. Okay. And just out of interest with that storage especially, is it your own storage or are you sitting on top of other?
Well, that's what's great. So the answer is yes.
When I mean sitting on top of other, like I'm assuming you're probably using some cloud provider yourself, but often you get like managed services.
So there's a couple of things. And what's great about Cribble Search is that it can search your storage, but it can also search our storage. Yeah. And that's where we come into what's called Cribble Lake.
Yeah.
The thing we've noticed is as we were getting Cribble Search going, is that surprisingly, a lot of teams had trouble getting access to cloud storage.
Yeah.
So, for example, the ordinary average, say a security team would have to go to the cloud center of excellence. They'd have to wait 30 to 40 days to get their object storage bucket. And then they would have to go to the IAM team to get access set up. So that's another week or 2 weeks. And then they'd have to go to another team to get their lifecycle policy set up. And so the idea with Cribble Lake is the idea that push a button, you get your storage in a few minutes. And then you have a slider that says, hey, I want my retention policy to be this. And you just move it and it's done. Your access is through the UI as well. So you're able to get all the things you need from cloud storage in a few minutes versus waiting, 35, 45, 60 days.
Mm. I think I just want to kind of quickly detail a little bit more of what you were saying in passing there, because I've been going down this particular pathway of looking at your features, but now I can see the product Stream, Edge, Search, Lake. So all of these, I'd like to understand maybe how much of those you said that, you can kind of fill in the gaps of what people don't have. Like what's the minimum I can bring to Cribble?
Well, so typically we start with Stream. So the idea is you put Stream between your sources and destinations, and that way you can start managing data going to your existing tools. The next place we see is teams want to then start decoupling their retention.
Yeah.
Retention is incredibly expensive in most of your data tools. And also it's a big barrier to migration. Probably one of the biggest lock-ins for migration is I can't get my data out of my existing tools, so I can't migrate away. Mm. And so that's where we use their storage or use Cribble Lake as a landing zone to start landing. And essentially they're going to switch their retention over. I got one provider, for example, that charges something where between 12 and 14 cents a gig for retention. Mm-hmm. And so we can provide them their retention in their own storage for 2 cents a gig. So that's a big delta. So they immediately have an ROI. Plus then now the data is at a vendor neutral format. Now the data is portable. And this is where the next evolution is. We start seeing, so I can use Cribble Search to search my archive. Mm. Instead of having to put that data back into my tools, waiting under rehydration, I can access it instantaneously.
So it's also an interesting way to be able to take data sources from some outputs that are more proprietary and transform it into OpenTelemetry or something like that.
And thus
be able to do more with it. Yeah.
This is something that was really transformative for my team was we were used to having to pull data out of very proprietary tools. Mm. And like, for example, for an IR or some sort of incident investigation, it was very painful. Once we had data in object storage, we were able to use a feature in Cribl called Replay.
Yeah.
Replay allows you to reach into object storage, find what you want, put a button, and you can put it back to anywhere.
Yeah.
So now my retention, so say the data came in through Splunk, now I could put that data anywhere. I could put that into Snowflake. I could put that in. I could share it anywhere across the business. So now it was portable, and it solved a very frustrating piece of being able to share data.
And taking my question to the other extreme, I also get the impression that if I come to Cribl with no kind of observability strategy, you can also give me everything I need.
Well, and this is something where, so just to be really, really frank, we don't have an APM story. And so in terms of a pure observability, where the idea that observability is providing insights into data, we're fairly new in that part of the market. So like we can take data into Cribl Search and we can give you basic graphs, for example, but we're not going to be able to yet give you machine learning. We're not going to be able to give you the kind of APM features that the big vendors offer.
Okay.
But this is where that you can see the clear evolution of, we have data management, we have the ability to search data in place, we have the ability to store data. Now, the new piece that's really interesting is called Cribl Lakehouse.
Yeah.
Cribl Lakehouse now accelerates that data dramatically. So instead of searching other people's object storage, you're searching our own accelerated lakehouse. So now you can access data very, very fast. And so then the next evolution that I'm hoping is, like, say by the end of the year, is where we'll start to be able to provide real insights into data.
And is this, so we can't have any kind of technology conversation these days without talking about this. I can see you have a Copilot product as well.
I do.
What kind of things can that do with Cribl? Yeah, I mean, obviously you have things at various different stages. So what can I do with Cribl, with Copilot and Cribl?
Sure. So it's unfortunately named, but we had to follow the convention. And so, just to advertise, so we've been doing live streams for the past couple of months, giving demos of Copilot, which I've been excited about. And so I'm a massive pessimist for AI. Yeah. I think the marketing of it is, I'm sick of it.
Yes.
But the nice thing is, so what I like about Cribl's approach too is, we're not going to try to provide you the X marks the spot, here's the solution type of AI. We're using AI to help you use the tools more effectively.
Okay.
So I have an error message. You put that error message into Copilot, it's going to tell you what it is. It's going to tell you how to fix it. I need help with a regex. And so you have regex, it's going to show you some options. It's going to test it for you. It's going to help you understand how to write better code. It's going to give you suggestions for better searches. Mm. It's going to help you with new features. I mean, for example, with a pipeline, you can say, I need a GDPR pipeline that masks out these three fields, write the pipeline. And it'll write 85% of the pipeline for you. So basically give you a scaffolding to then test, validate, and deploy.
How deep and wide can that go with all the various integration points you have?
It's getting wider and wider all the time. So right now, it's basic data management, basic pipelines. And we're slowly extending that 4 and 5 functions deep. We're getting ready to release something called a schematizer, where we're going to say, take this data format and map this to, say, OCFS for me.
Okay.
So the things and this all goes back to ease of use, things that everyone has to spend their time doing, how can we use the machines to make it easier?
Okay. The final product that maybe we've touched upon, but I'd just like to sort of understand what it is, the App Scope, Instrument, Collect, Observe, because in my mind, that sounds like lots of the other features. So is that your kind of I have nothing product, or am I misunderstanding quite what App Scope is?
So the idea with App Scope is to give you very low level instrumentation for applications.
Okay.
And so it deploys a probe.
Yeah.
Where it's then able to intercept low level kernel level data and give you more options.
Yeah.
It's very much for people who are interested in that type of level of detail. And so we found that it's as widely deployed as I would like. I think it's a little misunderstood, but it has a lot of value for people who are looking for that really low level type of data.
Is this, I don't want to just throw around some buzzwords to sound knowledgeable, but it's sounding a little bit to me like something like eBPF or?
It's not quite there. I mean, okay. I think that's something that I'd like us to aspire to, but it's not there.
Okay. I just saw, throw it into a Linux binary. So it kind of got.
I've always been a big fan of that type of data because to me, it's just, I want the unvarnished truth. I mean, just to give you an example, this is when I was still a customer.
Yeah.
We had a binary that was, it was a mainframe interface and it was a very highly customized C++ binary. It was written by a developer who was no longer with the company.
Yeah.
And it worked because it was, we needed an interface with mainframes. And so we were having trouble with it. Couldn't figure out what was going on because of course it had no logging whatsoever. And I was able to attach AppScope to it in order to understand why it was erroring out. And of course, as everything, it was a DNS problem.
It's always too slow, isn't it? So, I mean, in, what is that? 7 years. Yeah, it feels like 2018 wasn't that long ago, but it is 7 years. That's quite a lot of products and functionality already. What's next on the plan? Apart from, it sounds like kind of adding more to some of those existing features. Is there anything more grand that's also planned?
And this is where I think that just try to focus on always getting better.
Yeah.
This is where I think the adding insight into Lakehouse is going to be key. So just to share with what we've already publicly talked about, very much so focused on better data monitoring, bringing AI into the data monitoring conversation, making management easier. So that's our composable data management initiative. And that's what there's what I was mentioning, trying to find the middle ground between pure code-based deployments versus ClickOps-based deployments.
Yep.
And then also then finally insights into data. And that's where I think Lakehouse is going to come in. And so the idea is let's build on our strengths, build on our foundation. And really what matters to users is more effective results with less effort.
Just, you know, covering lots of these different bases and integration points with potential competitors, how do you remain, it's going to sound like a terrible sequence of words. How do you remain competitive with your competitors because you're kind of, you know, reliant on them as well to a degree?
Well, I think the thing is we have to stay true to our values. Yeah. The idea that we want to give people choice and control. This is something that as a customer really matter to me. Engineers build their own tools because they want to be able to do what they want to do, when they want to do it, and how they want to do it. And so if you can provide that level of control to engineers as a commercial company, I think you can cover a real need, that emotional need that I need to be able to do what I need to do. Make it easier for me. And that's a very powerful combination. I've just been absolutely blown away when I talk to our customers and our users and just the emotional connection they have with choice, with being able to have control. And I think that's the thing that we offer because that's, you look at the entire rest of the market. It's give me all your data. I'll solve all of your challenges. Look at a lot of the vendors, the like platformization plays. Have become even more prevalent now.
Okay. Yeah. And just because a lot of the listeners are sort of quite practical people, it's always nice to have something that people can try. I see you have a free tier. In terms of kind of input output, it's fairly generous. There's a lot of features that are not available, but there's some. What I think I'm still trying to see, I can see there's like a download and install script or add to the cloud. Like if I want to just get started on that free tier, just to experiment, what do I need to do?
So there's two options. So there's a self-install feature where you can you can download Cribble Stream and Cribble Edge to your own computer and have it set up in a few minutes and running. We also have an option of what's called Cribble Cloud. So go to cribble.cloud and sign up for a free cloud account. So the self-managed version of Stream and Edge is good for a terabyte of data a day. Yep. So I think that's excellent. I completely frustrated previously where something like this would, you know, 100 megs of data a day.
Yeah.
There's nothing that you can test at 100 megs of data a day. So the cloud has the same option. but also much Cribble Search, Cribble Lake options as well. I believe it's 50 gigs now for Cribble Lake. So you can try it out, get a feel for how it works and how it matters. Now, one thing I also want to mention is we have this thing called sandboxes.
Okay.
Sandboxes are the actual installs. And so go to sandbox.cribble.io and you have a large choice of use cases. So here, try out Transform, try out Replay, try out Search, and click a button and you're going to spin up an entire cloud environment for you. And it's going to guide you through a 10-15 minute walkthrough of how to do each use case.
Okay. As far as I can tell with both of those, it's sort of standard installation steps, a script, containers, et cetera, et cetera.
Yes.
So everything fits into the sort of standard ecosystem of tools that people are likely to be using.
Exactly. Yep. And just trying to give people hands-on experience. That was another thing as a customer. I always got super annoyed when, like, here's a demo, and it'd be some Flash-based demo of the tool working. I didn't actually have my hands actually on the tool.
Yep, exactly. Yeah.
And so it was really you were able to learn so much. Now, one thing I also want to mention is we have free training.
Yeah.
So it's called Cribble University. I spent so much money as a customer on training.
Yeah.
I think I easily spent $300,000 or $400,000 in total on training. And so I have free training, really high quality training that's available to anyone, whether you're a customer or not, I think is a really big value. Because the idea is that we just want people to know how to use the tools. I mean, I think that that's a fair thing to, you know, want to do.
Okay. Cool. So we should probably explain the name if people are interested, because we've been saying it and maybe it's not obvious. It's CIRBL.io if people are interested in finding out more. And I don't know, anything else you want to add?
I really appreciate your time. Thank you very much. I think these are great questions. I just want to reiterate the idea of just trying to give people the choice control they need to do their job, spend a lot less time doing things they don't want to do so they can spend more time working on their detections, working on their monitoring, working on just shift the focus, you know, to get as much value from your data as possible. But thank you very much.
I'm intrigued. I have done a couple of blog posts on FluentBit and spent far too much time. And I'm interested to see how much easier it might have been.
That's the thing, is it's just, you know, people have their choices, the tools, and you can do wondrous things. It's just, you know, do you have the time?
I think that's a good point to stop. The answer is invariably no. So, okay, Ed, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate it. Thank you.
So that was it. That was our guest today. Thank you very much for joining me in the Tech Lounge. I have been Christian Schiller. If you want to know more about Tech Lounge, head on over to christianschiller.com or please tell your friends about us. It's quiet and cozy in here, but the more listeners, the merrier. You can find more at christianschiller.com/podcast or in the show notes or episode notes, wherever you found this podcast. Thank you very much for joining me, and you're most welcome next time.